If you're in business, you probably have a website, but can your site handle your growth? How many visitors before your site slows down or crashes? What about storage and data security? From web hosting to virtual servers, Pear Networks provides the online infrastructure you need to start, grow, and flourish. When it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. No frustrating chatbots or sitting on hold for hours. Check out pear.com today to learn more. That's PAIR.com.
The Agile Brand.
Welcome to the B2B Agility Podcast, where we look at the factors that drive success in B2B marketing, with a focus on the people, processes, data, and platforms that make B2B brands stand out and thrive in a competitive marketplace. I'm your host, Greg Kilstrom, advising Fortune 1000 brands on MarTech, marketing operations, and CX, best-selling author and speaker. Before we get started, I wanted to let you know that my latest book, Priority is Action, 7 Principles for Better Strategies, Decisions, and Outcomes, is now available. In it, I give ideas and insights for leaders and teams that need to make meaningful progress on their priorities. After all, our priorities are what we do, not what we say we'd like to do. You can find Priority is Action on Amazon or learn more on my website, gregkilstrom.com. Now let's get on to the show. Today we're going to talk about B2B startups and why companies that may have amazing ideas still fail to gain traction and ultimately don't succeed. And just as importantly, what existing B2B startups and young companies can do differently to change their potential. To help me discuss this topic, I'd like to welcome James McCormick, CMO and Managing Growth Advisor at McCormick I. James, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks, Greg. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, definitely. Looking forward to talking about this with you. Why don't we get started with you giving a little background on yourself and what you're currently doing?
Yeah, and kind of the topic really aligns itself with, I guess, my kind of history of the last, I'm almost embarrassed to say, couple of decades, where I've kind of worked a lot with technology startups, either being part of the management team in product management or product marketing and marketing, or actually I was at Forrester for a few decades and a decade, running research and working and advising small tech companies, particularly in the SaaS technology space, and working with those leaders there. So I guess I couldn't help but kind of being an expert on, or at least having a strong view as to why these startup companies start, succeed and fail. So yeah, it's a super interesting topic for me, and especially in my current role and kind of running my consultancy now, McCormick I, I advise a lot of technology buyers, vendors, and investors around this topic as well.
Great, great. So we're going to talk a bit more about why B2B startups do fail, but let's maybe start with some definitions and things. So, you know, from your perspective, what is success and failure from a B2B startup perspective? You know, what generally do startups set out to achieve that many don't achieve?
Well, actually, that's an interesting thing, right? If you don't define success, how are you going to get there? Right. I remember having a career advisor saying, what do you want to do? And I said, well, I don't know. Then how do you know? Yeah, so it's a bit like that. And it's really in the eye of the founder and founders and the investors, right? What do they see as success? And to be honest, it can vary wildly, should I say. Yeah. But yeah, generally accepted, it's, you know, you're thinking about market adoption, and particularly the speed of penetration of adoption, particularly in the startup world, right? You know, how quickly can you penetrate a market whilst you're burning through that? Yeah, right. You're generally running at a kind of a loss, right? So you got to like penetrate a market quickly so that you can find a route to profitability pretty quickly for the investors before, you know, that investor money kind of burns out. And so that's a, you know, top of mind. And obviously revenue growth comes with that, right? And being able to do that. And those two really point towards a viable, profitable roadmap. So if you're an external person kind of thinking of investing in a company, you know, for the next round of funding or that acquisition or that float, you know, is that, do you have a viable, that's super successful. And then there's kind of secondary, or what I would call secondary things like innovation, you know, that's, do you have, are you innovative? Do you have brand recognition? Do you have scalability? These are all success kind of metrics that we generally think about in some kind of way when it comes to what success looks like.
Yeah. So given that, and yeah, I mean, it's certainly a wide range. I mean, obviously, if if a company runs out of money and can't get funding, that's a pretty pretty short stop there. But there, as you mentioned, there's a lot of different metrics, and some a little more qualitative than others. But you know, taking a step back, maybe how many startups actually succeed and fail in the B2B space?
Well, it's draconian or Darwinian, if you kind of really think about it. Various kind of stats, about 1 in 10 actually succeed, right?
Yeah.
But there's some more kind of solid stats that, you know, within the 20% of these startups fail within the first 2 years, you know, almost 50% don't survive the 5 years, all the way up till, you know, coming on to 80% aren't around in the kind of 10 to 15 year kind of period. So it is, you know, this topic is what are the most, I guess, untalked about things when it comes to startups. It's really quite draconian. And you know, the weird thing is when you look at founders that startup company, you know, you get these serial startup folks, which I admire and love, but just because you've had one startup doesn't mean necessarily that you're going to have any greater chance of success or much greater chance of success as your next kind of startup. So, you know, long story short, we aren't as a, let's say, a community at the moment, technology community, very good at startups at the moment. So that's why this is, you know, super interesting topic to even be thinking about.
With so many different dimensions, and yeah, you know, you can have a great idea, but the timing is wrong, or you can have a great idea, but just can't get the funding, or, you know, some of these things. So, you know, we're going to talk about this here. So, you know, I want to talk about, you know, why startups fail in the B2B startups fail in the first place. So, you know, could you talk about some of the things that you've seen from both an internal as well as an operational perspective in your work now that a lot of B2B startups get wrong?
Well, you know, I kind of come from the outside in perspective of, you know, from a product marketing kind of background, or a market background and even marketing background. So I kind of look at it, I've always had a little bit of a bias. I've always gone to the CEOs that I've worked with and for, and I've said, you need better product marketing, and, you know, it's just terrible. And I've always, for a while, I was just, you know, for me, it was just a kind of a gut. But it was interesting. I kind of looked at some of the data that there is out there on why most startups fail. And guess what? You know, 34% of startup failures are due to poor product market fit. Now, operationally or functionally, it just really means you don't have good product management practice. What is product management? It's really understanding the market and understanding the products and understanding how that product fits that market or that customer and keeping those aligned and not only kind of tracking it. Now, you know, operationally speaking, and, you know, this kind of aligns with what I've kind of known for, let me say, longer than I wish, is that, you know, they're just very bad at doing product management. It's not appreciated. It's a kind of a secondary kind of construct, but a secondary consideration, should I say, but it is the biggest single reason for failure. Other things are, the second biggest reason is marketing strategies. You know, what does that mean? It's essentially, you know, companies or these startups not really truly at the right kind of way, understanding who their customers are, where they are, and how to essentially kind of connect with them. So it's kind of interesting. So a lot of these are kind of outside in kind of things, understanding your customer. And the third biggest reason is really the age old things, old, you know, skill shortage, especially in these high-skilled kind of technology areas that we kind of talk about. So those are the three biggest reasons. And things like, you know, operationally being having suboptimal operations are actually right down in the kind of 9th or 10th reason for failure. So those operationally, that's not the reason. It's just really not understanding the market and not understanding how that product fits with that market and how to reach the customers within that market. So, you know, it's quite simple, right? This is not rocket science.
right. Well, and so to kind of build on probably all of those in some way, but to build on the marketing component, and, you know, let's say the a company finds the right customer. What about the customer experience once they get those customers? You know, you mentioned product development and that part not necessarily aligning, and you know, there's a lot of considerations. You know, getting a customer is one thing. I certainly know a lot about that piece of it, but keeping a customer is, you know, can be a whole other component here. So, you know, what are many B2B startups missing there?
Well, it's kind of interesting. I think I'll answer this in a way that kind of thinks of, I talk about your customer experience cycle that companies kind of go through. And, you know, I don't have stats on this, but I've seen it a lot where, you know, those companies that survive that seed capital phase and now into the kind of later investment phases and now can spend a bit of money on essentially customer support, you know, product experience and those kind of things. The ones that succeed, you know, succeed because they have this kind of great customer experience, which is expressed through the support that they might get through their, you know, customer experience team, customer support team, professional services, and also the kind of, you know, the simple, easy to use product experience. And they kind of go through this like euphoria phase where they have these kind of great customers that are advocates that are standing up on stage and kind of espousing them. And then they get to a certain size. And, you know, when you get to the kind of, let's say the, in terms of run rate, you know, $75 million run rate, you kind of, they almost get too big in terms of, you know, they're obviously selling to more customers. So their processes for, you know, being surrounding and hugging their customers that are going through struggles are not scalable, right? They were in the past, they had one or two customers that were struggling. They would throw everybody at it. We're working 24/7. But when you get to a certain level of number of customers, your customer experience support that you have through, you know, customer support, customer experience teams, et cetera, just are not scaled. They're kind of relying on that age old, yeah, we'll just, you know, we're customer focused, we'll just throw everything at it. You can't do that, right? You know, you can't do that to people that are in there. You need processes to really kind of support. So you start to kind of tumble there as well. And again, from a product experience perspective, what I find is that the product becomes, in terms of the experience that the customer, the user gets, because it's a user experience, it becomes a little bit more fragmented as they try expand beyond, say, browser to the app, you know, through to kind of other digital channels, et cetera, and becomes the actual in-app experience and the support they get within that kind of fragment. So you kind of then go through this valley of disillusionment.
Yeah.
The other kind of areas when these companies get acquired, particularly by the kind of the big tech companies, right, is that they almost get, it's just, I'd say, and again, I don't have too many stats, but the majority of companies that I've seen being acquired go through a massive dip in the customer experience. The existing customers really go through a little bit of a dip in terms of their happiness with the technology provider that had been provided. And then obviously, you know, they come through the other side and there's some great examples of then those processes being put in place to be able to scale that great kind of customer experience, the restructuring of the, you know, the products or the technology that has been, or re-architecting it so you can, and reskinning it so you provide that great in-app experience again. But, you know, there is a definite kind of cyclicity that I kind of see out there in terms of that.
Yeah, and I've seen similar to that. I've done a bit of writing and research on that from an operational and even a company culture perspective. And there's, for those listening out there, there's a framework called the competing values framework that is pretty interesting. You know, just very, we could probably do a whole show about it, but, you know, very briefly for those less familiar with it, you know, at the top of this quadrant are collaboration and innovation, and at the bottom are, you know, processes and a real sales market driven culture. And so, you know, you see startups kind of start at the top there. They're very collaborative, they're team oriented, you know, it's a family kind of setting, and they're also super innovative and, you know, kind of blue sky, you know, and sky's the limit kind of thing. But as time goes in, kind of exactly what you're saying, it's almost like gravity sets in and they start realizing, well, okay, we want to be innovative and team oriented, but we've also got to sell product and have processes in place to scale. So I think it kind of mirrors what you're saying, which is the successful companies, yeah, they go through those transitions. Like, you know, Apple, just to use an example probably everybody's familiar with, definitely started out that same way. You know, innovative companies have found a way to kind of make all of that work. And, you know, there's no one way to answer that question, so to speak, but, you know, good, innovative, long-lasting companies kind of find a way to balance those four things.
Yeah, and I agree. And, you know, I think we might discuss a bit later on in our discussion, but there's this kind of balance between quality and innovation, right? Or where you are trying to get right. And even I think no matter what size company you are, you know, it's almost like if you're going to be innovative, you kind of, you've been a bit disruptive and you're disrupting things like experience, the products that you're providing.
Yeah.
And, but you can't afford not to, because if you don't move with the market, move with the customer, you die. But of course, you know, you got to deliver quality so your customers can consume and that great customer experience. So, you know, I think the real answer to kind of success, or one of the successes, is companies that can get that balance right and operationalize this balance between innovation and quality are the ones that ultimately kind of succeed. And I think that competing value discussion definitely kind of speaks to that.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com.
And so, along those lines, you know, as far as being able to be nimble and adapting, you know, there's a lot of talk about, you know, pivoting, failing fast, all these terms that are kind of thrown around here. Certainly, I've seen some of that. I'm sure you've seen it done successfully. But, you know, are some of these overused or maybe misinterpreted? You know, how do you look at this idea of pivoting, failing fast, you know, those other things? And, you know, are maybe some of these B2B startups reading the wrong lessons from, you know, what they see from some of those Silicon Valley tropes?
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, being allowed to fail is certainly something that's, and failing fast is certainly something I've bought into as somebody who's been involved with agile implementations and certainly involved with experimentation technologies over the last however long. But it's how you do it that really, it's not what you do in this situation, because you actually need to be able to pivot. And you can actually see, I've dragged up some stats where, you know, firms that kind of pivot are 2 to 3 times more likely to grow faster than those, right? So they, you know, that have pivoted at least once or twice in their kind of startup kind of lifetime. But there's a lot of failure out there when it comes to pivot. And it's like pivoting right means when, you know, you get something wrong, what are your lessons from that? And having systems in place to actually understand why things went wrong in the first place. And then, most importantly, what you can do to actually, you know, where do you need to pivot to? It's not about just blindly doing something different just for the sake of it. Yes, of course, if, you know, things aren't right, just doing something is better than nothing. But doing something in an informed sense, in terms of, you know, learning from your failures and moving on and operationalizing that kind of that failure process is critical to success. So failing successfully and moving on is what you need to do, not just failing for this, you know, and then kind of spending it, because you can't, you know, you have to succeed pretty quickly at some point in that kind of fail fast scenario, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So you've touched on a bunch of these things already, I would imagine, but, you know, what are successful B2B startups doing differently then?
Well, I kind of like to think of it, and this comes to the way that I structure some of my engagements with, you know, some of these startups. I think about that in terms of their entire go-to-market strategy, in terms of, you know, their market, the products, and the product market fit, and the pricing, you know, their pricing methodology, and you know, essentially how they go to market their channel bits, right? So when you come to the market, bit. You know, what I find is understanding the market and understanding who your ideal customer is, the successful companies not only do their homework, because at some point, most of these startups, the founder or somebody else really gets to understand the market that and the problems that they're solving, the customers that they are kind of feeding, right?
Yeah.
But what happens is that, you know, they kind of stick on their original idea of their market. So not only should you have an insights-driven approach to understanding your market, in other words, do your research, you have to continually do that. You need to operationalize that understanding of the market and understand how it's actually kind of how that's actually changing. And so getting back to this concept of product marketing, you need a strong product marketing. And when it comes to the product bit, which is the second part of the go-to-market thing discussion, is really, again, we talked about it, right? This balance between quality and innovation. Tend to find that the more mature organizations, the more mature technology providers, they lack innovation, focus on quality. With startups, it's almost the other way around. They focus on innovation, but drop the quality to a lot. And so you're dropping customer the experience. And so getting that kind of product innovation balance right is super important, and successful companies do that right. Pricing, it's, you know, keep it simple, keep it easy to understand, transparency, have a kind of a tiered product-led growth approach, like freemium, trial, you know, silver, gold things. Successful B2B SaaS companies do that, you know, almost bar none. They're very good at their kind of pricing and their entry, you know, bringing their customers in a way that's not going to, that shows them value almost before they get, you know, they pay for that value. And of course, yeah, the channel bit, which is always, you know, that's the sales bit. The thing where that's successful, that really distinguishes those successful companies from the rest is, you know, actually they partner channel, the indirect markets, you know, bringing in the right service providers, the right technology partners, et cetera, to help them scale and penetrate that market or accelerate penetration into that market. Those are, you know, they get it right. You know, direct, there is some chain differences there, but they're slightly more nuanced. But yeah, I mean, again, this is about an 8-hour discussion, Greg.
Right, right.
Those are some of the things that these successful companies are getting right.
Yeah, we're hitting the highlights here, but yeah, definitely. Well, and you know, so as we've already talked about, I mean, there's a lot of benefits to being a startup. You know, there's the ability to be more agile and approaches, and you know, there's not all of the technical and operational and even culture debt that a lot of very large organizations have. You know, what are some of the lessons here though that a B2B startup could learn from more mature companies and maybe even vice versa? You know, what could more mature companies learn from successful startups?
Yeah, it's interesting. So in terms of what mature companies can learn, it's almost like what have they forgotten is really the question, right? Because at some point, you know, a mature company, I guess, was a startup at some point, right? But some of the common areas where you see mature companies kind of falling over and which startups do better is like looking after customers, putting the human into the kind of customer experience and kind of supporting them. And actually, a lot of my work over the years has been actually interviewing customers for their perceptions around, you know, the supplier and the experiences that they're getting. And you find, you know, the stats, you know, and I've done a number of these studies, you know, show that startups do much better when it comes to customer satisfaction, because essentially mature companies, they get, for some reason, either their processes are kind of slightly broken. They've kind of taken, they're almost too big to put the human back into that customer support person that picks up the phone to that lonely user that's got this critical issue, or that like senior decision maker who's like got her career on the line, right? They are there for them, and they typically do very well. And I think if large companies or mature companies could maintain that, they would also be in a much better position. And actually, what is the one reason, and I'll answer this as a rhetorical question, the biggest reason why companies, why customers stay with their B2B companies? And I've run a number of surveys over a 10-year period on this thing. The biggest reason is vision and passion. So if you're a supplier of technology, you have a inspiring vision as to where you're going with your technology and the problems that it solves, and you show passion in there, you're more likely than not for your customers to keep with you, to stick with you. What you find is startups have that vision and passion, right? And they, and their burns brighter than the more mature companies. So as a mature kind of a technology provider, you should find some way of bringing that back in order to remain successful.
Yeah, that's great. What about, you know, at startups, you know, they have the vision, they have the passion, they don't always have the resources that a larger organization has. And so, you know, any organization, you know, even very large enterprises have to be careful about what they prioritize. But if you're a startup, you know, you've got limited resources, limited people to do the work and things. How do you look at this, and how do you guide successful startups to like figure out how to prioritize things?
Yeah, and this kind of leads into the discussion about failure, right? You can fail as long as you're not failing too often, and you fail right. It's kind of learning, but startups, you only have one or two goes at getting things right, and so when you think about your biggest cost as a startup, it's infrastructure, it's product development, and it's your sales teams, right? And so these are like high cost items. You better make sure that you're building the right products on top of the right technology and selling it to the right customer. And so the biggest thing you can do to optimize that and get it right is to make sure, and again, understand your market, understand the problems that you're trying to solve and the priorities of those problems to your customers and the value that you give to them, and market to them. So if you focus on the product marketing, understanding your marketing and guiding your sales teams and your product teams to those markets, then you will prioritize your major costs more effectively, more efficiently. Yeah. So those are the two musts in order to get that right.
Yeah. So last topic I wanted to talk about, you know, we've touched on a little bit throughout, you know, just talking here, but wanted to talk a little bit more about the work that you do specifically with companies. And like I said, you've had a chance to talk a little bit about it, but how would you define your overall approach to working with organizations? And, you know, while every organization and company is different, you know, where do you like to start in order to get an understanding of where some of the maybe, you know, greatest challenges or greatest opportunities lie?
Yeah, that's a good thought. So I think about it in terms of two ways, and I approach in two ways when I have a new like customer that I'm or client that I'm dealing with. And I look at their organization from an inside out perspective, right? So look at their go-to-market. So we've talked about it already, their market, their product, their pricing, their channel. Look at where the weaker points are and the stronger points are, and then essentially tackle where the problem might be. And quite often I'll be honest with you, quite often their understanding of the market is about 18 months old. And so we kind of start there, right? And then look at pricing, et cetera. Then the other way is the kind of inside up perspective. Think about it from a customer life cycle or customer experience life cycle perspective. And, just understand how they get to discover the brand, so think about the category that they're in. Are you putting yourself in the right, as a vendor, putting yourself in the right category, your brand awareness? Look at the kind of how they explore and engage. So through to how they buy, their user support, and then ultimately retain those customers, right? And there's different functions and different areas across that entire life cycle that need to be kind of looked at, and their weak points. And again, I kind of look at those weak points and where the opportunities are, and we highlight them. But a full inside out and outside in perspective is what I'd like to take.
So last thing here, since I started in my career, there've been certainly a lot of trends, fads, as well as some, really meaningful changes in the industry. I mean, I remember, when I first started out, it wasn't even a foregone conclusion that a company would have a website, or, at least a functioning website or something like that. So, lots of change over the past couple decades. And, do you see a lot of B2B startups these days chasing things like AI, certainly, top of everybody's mind, perhaps other things even, but, chasing things like AI in order to get funding, but maybe without a clear AI strategy? What do you advise companies headed down that path to do?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of these, I think you call them tropes, or just these general things that can mean everything and nothing at the same time. Right. I remember when cloud came along, right? What the hell was cloud? We're like, okay, how many years later we know what it is, right? And AI is kind of it's the same thing. It's obviously like super important. So, but I think you got to get back to basics, right? So you know, whatever you do, whatever new concept or whatever new investment, whatever new focus that you think about needs to be thought about in terms of three things. One is value to your customer. You know, what value can it bring? And then two and three already, the how can you boost your operations, reduce your costs, and increase your revenue, essentially. I put those two things or three things together. So in terms of customer value, let's like get quite specific on AI, right? Like, and the value that I've seen, especially over the last 5 years, is things like using supervised machine learning to improve personalization and experimentation, unsupervised for better fraud detection, computer vision for measuring creative standards or imagery, images, or large language models for generative activities for content applications. So understanding what AI, what value can provide your customers very quickly is very important for your business. So it's not just AI, it's what type of AI doing what, right? You need to get to there. And in terms of boosting operations and reducing costs, well, things like how can you use different types of AI to acquire data for you, or to improve reduce time to onboarding your customers. So think about it in those ways. And there's some really great examples out there at the moment that you should look at. So be quite specific on these things, whether it's AI, cloud, or whatever else comes your way. Get very quickly to the nub of the value it can provide your customers and your business.
That's great. That's great. Well, James, so thanks so much for joining the show. One last question before we wrap up here. You've given a lot of great insights and advice already, but what's one recommendation you'd have for B2B marketers to stay agile and be successful in the months and years ahead?
Well, my old man, my dad, bless his soul, ran a large construction company. And he always just said, James, just keep it simple. People, process, technology. Right? Get the right people. You know, be a good leader. Manage them, inspire them, and then make processes that are simple for them to understand and enable them and speed things up. And then, you know, get the technology to help them deliver the value that you need. So just keep it simple. And really, it starts with people.
Yeah, that's great. Love it. Well, again, I'd like to thank James McCormick, CMO and Managing Growth Advisor at McCormick Eye, for joining the show. You can learn more about James and McCormick Eye by following the links in the show notes.
Thanks again for listening to the B2B Agility Podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please take a minute to subscribe and leave us a rating so that others can find the show more easily. You can access more episodes of the show at www.b2bagility.com. That's b2bagility.com. While you're there, check out my series of best-selling Agile brand guides covering a wide variety of marketing technology topics, or you can search for Greg Kilstrom on Amazon. Until next time, stay focused and stay agile.
The Agile Brand.